Gabriella Somerville has been surrounded by planes and a love of aviation her entire life. Instead of a dollhouse, she was given model planes and was taken along to many air shows by her father and uncle near her home south of London. Today, with 25 years of experience in commercial aviation, she is founder, CEO, and the sole owner of Connect Jets, a leading private jet brokerage handling sales, charters, and logistics for clients around the world. The company was launched back in 2009, with Gabriella providing her own seed funding, with money she made from the sale of a cabin in Switzerland. Connect Jets turned over a £4 million profit after year two and has soared ever since, working closely with plane owners and manufacturers to reduce both operating costs and carbon footprint, while creating safer and more comfortable travel. Through and through, the company exemplifies high-touch customer service and forward thinking. Two vital business practices Gabriella learned early in her career while working alongside Sir Richard Branson as part of the inaugural Virgin Atlantic cabin crew. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For today's program, I sat down with Gabriella to hear about her incredible career in aviation, the impact her company is having on the market today, and the importance of having more women leaders in the industry.
From a young age, I'd always wanted to travel. That was inherent from a young age. And so I had actually, prior to joining Virgin, travelled to America and was a nanny or an au pair in the US. And I think that had given me this sort of greater desire to kind of reach other countries in the planet. So I started to apply for jobs within the airline sector, which was a lot harder than what I thought. So I think I went for 11 interviews before getting my first one, British Island Airways, which I was there for 6 months, and then on to Virgin Atlantic thereafter.
And you were part of the original Virgin cabin crew, is that right?
Yeah, I was going back a long time. Yes, I was one of the original Virgin girls, going back to when it was in its really embryonic days, when it just started. They were exciting times. Richard had kind of hit the market by storm by recreating an airline with a different format. He very much brought blue sky thinking into the service, into actually every process of booking and everything else at that time. So it was a great place to be, you know, in the late 1980s, and being part of the Virgin Empire when it was being built.
Do you think your interest in being a part of that was the excitement around the business end of the airline, or a little bit of seeing the world and being a part of it? What was that?
In those times, being a stewardess was one of those sort of jobs that everybody wanted. We used to be down route for 10 days. This was a romantic job. It was fantastic. You're traveling the world, getting paid to stay in five-star hotels. But I think it was a combination of both. I think Virgin stood out at the time. I loved aircraft. I loved flying. And I loved traveling. So it ticked every box for me in terms of where I wanted to go with my career.
And you moved up quite quickly with Virgin as well. From what you told me when we first met, I think Richard Branson had a big impact on you. And part of that was the entrepreneurial spirit that he encouraged for you to think outside the box a little bit. The people that worked for him, he wanted that.
Very much so. I mean, it was great in that sense because he would bring out the entrepreneur in you. If it was there, if there was something in you that was seeking a little bit more. And I think you're right, I was very lucky that I went in at the right time. It was a young airline. I went through to being purser quite quickly, working in the first class cabin. And Richard liked to see that passion, and he liked to see people that had a desire to get on. And I think in the cabin, he would come upstairs, sit on a bar box when I was on the upper deck, which was my favourite position. And he would say, how would you improve the service? You know, what are the passengers saying? What are you thinking? And that was what was great about it. He would sit up there, little pad and pen, and just write down these gems, because actually we were the best people to ask, because inherently we were working day in, day out with the customers, and we knew what they wanted. So that was, I think, the key to his success, is the fact that he listened to his shop floor workers and he wanted to know what worked. And therefore, out of that, he then built this very credible airline, but was on the cutting edge in terms of where it was going in the sector.
Do you think you could pinpoint one of the greatest takeaways you learned from him and getting that chance to hear from him directly?
The one thing I liked about him was I was very lucky. I was on the promotional team. So I got on all the inaugural flights. So I did the London to Los Angeles, where we had Jacqueline Bisset, Jane Seymour, David Soule, Mike Yarwood, some names probably not recognised today. And we had the B-52s bombing out, a live band, and you know, in this piece of aluminium tubing. We had models sort of doing catwalk around the aircraft in bikinis and plastic masks. And I think what I learned from that was, even when we were down route, Richard would always invite us to all the events. And he realised that we were his key people. And he taught me about leadership, I think, more than anything, that to be a true leader and to be successful and inherently to have the people following you, which if you're going to create a brand, you have to create that all the way through, from the top right through to the bottom. And he was excellent at that because he would always look behind him. He'd always see if we were following. And if we weren't, he'd notice that and say, right, what do we need to do to make this better? Mm. If we had a particularly difficult flight, or let's say it was delayed for a long period, or we had done something out of the ordinary, we'd receive a nice little gift, sometimes a bottle of champagne, maybe a fruit basket. Every Christmas card was signed by him. They were the little touches that make you feel special. And I think, you know, no man, we're an island on our own, but when you create a team that believe in your vision, believe in you, and actually feel loyal to you because you've been so good to them, then I just think that is where his success is and where it lied at that time.
And just moving forward with your own career, I imagine that sort of really stayed with you in the next few roles that you took on. And that's actually having a lot of people under you, being in charge of cabin crew, moving to British. You really sort of, your career took off in that sense.
I really didn't want to leave Virgin. I'd completed 7 years, but I was also eager to form a career. And that was beyond sort of being up in the air. I knew there was a time limitation for that for me. And I was eager and keen to move forward. So I then moved to British Airways because it was dead man's shoes at Virgin. And in terms of getting a role on the ground, I went to British Airways. It was interesting because you're going from this sort of very entrepreneurial setup to a very corporate entity which worked on a completely different principle. So it took quite a while for me to kind of complete that change in my mind, really, to go from one setup to another. But British Airways allowed me to move quite quickly through the ranks, allowed me to get this completely holistic view of aviation, from cabin crew to special services to product to managing two fleets at Gatwick to being part of customer service or managing the cabin crew there very closely with the unions. So here I really, I think, got my cornerstone, my grounding for the future that I would have in terms of having my own aviation set up.
And did you know that would go into the world of charter jets or private jets? Because that's where you went next, is that right?
Correct. Had no idea. And that's what I love about life. You know, many things happen by default and not intention. And it's the journey that you're on. And I had completed almost 14 years in commercial aviation. And I took about a year and a half out and went to go and live in the Alps, bought myself a chalet and set up a small business there, which was purely running small agency events. It was more of a lifestyle than building a business. And then inherently, I did miss aviation. And I ended up being part of, at the time, a sort of warbird association in Geneva, which was these old warbirds at the time, these old aircraft, the Stearman's T6s. And I ended up flying with a couple of friends in these and then helping them set up a syndicate program on these old warbirds. But there was a time limitation to that. And then again, I got invited by accident, if you like, to EBACE in Geneva, which is the biggest sort of private aviation convention in Europe. And it was there that my next path would follow. I met a lady called Judith Morton, who was, I think, one of the first women to really conquer the private jet world and be in the sort of managerial director position. And she was managing Skyjet for Bombardier. And I was then invited to an interview and very luckily got the job as client relationship manager of Bombardier Skyjet based at Farnborough Airport. Mm. So that saw me coming back to the UK and re-engaging with aviation, but on a private jet side.
I imagine this is probably the period where you start to think about your own venture and what you can do in that space. Is this where the origin for ConnectJets comes, around this time?
Absolutely. I had to learn a lot, and I was in the best place to. I had Judith Morton, Andrew Hoy, who were experienced in this particular sector, and I just decided to go in there and learn the ropes and learn quickly. And I travelled a lot to the US to see Bombardier. I grew a team from 1 to 4 of us, looking after all the clients around the world. And that was a great job in itself, because I was able then to wine and dine some of the biggest movers and shakers. And that is a story in itself. And being able to ask the questions that possibly people ask me now, how did it start? Mm. What enthused you? Bombardier definitely was the part of where I started to feel like maybe one day there was something out there that I could start. And with this sort of mix of experience and being with Richard Branson and Virgin Atlantic and then going to British Airways and then Bombardier, I was getting this very great overview of the industry, and I was starting to get my own ideas of how we could do things maybe slightly differently and what I could do in the future.
So that moment actually comes in 2009 when you do launch the company. Quite a tricky time financially to start an airline or to start a company on your own. Where did the idea, what was the decision that led to you to actually doing it at that time?
It was a strange thing, and always in life there are a mass of circumstances that drive you into place or position. Some of those are uncomfortable and some of them aren't. I think for me, I had concluded about 3.5 years Bombardier. I had then joined VistaJet and I was on the vice president of sales there. My chalet in the Alps, one day I had somebody call me up and saying it was a Parisian buyer. They wanted to buy it cash. The euro's parity to the pound. I had this cash in my bank. And there was something inside of me that was feeling a desire to start something. And I was sort of getting to that age, around sort of 40, where I thought, I need to do it now if I'm going to do something. And there was also a broken relationship in that. So there was this mixture or elements of life that kind of pushed me into this position of starting something. And that's where ConnectJet started. Interestingly enough, though, we'll say about 3 years prior to that, I had actually bought the domain. And that was just one afternoon I was sitting there and thinking, what if one day I start my own airline? And I just started to go through all the names that I thought would be quite cool. So actually the domain, always ConnectJet's birth 3 years prior to that, but actually she came to birth in 2009.
So if I have this right, the money that you got from the sale of your chalet, you put back into launching this company, and that was your seed money. You did your own venture funding.
Absolutely. Not saying that's the best way. It was the way at the time. Absolutely right. I had some spare cash now from the chalet sale. I had an idea, and that was the seed capital, and I went for it. And you're right in saying that it was actually a atrocious time, in one sense, to start a business, because there was the downturn. We'd come from a very strong season in terms of the aviation, the private jet sector growing, coming over from the US. And then 2008, 2009, it started to crash a bit. But I've always thought there's never a perfect time, but in every time there's opportunities. So we were looking at distressed sales, distressed customers, looking to leverage hours, unused hours to bring some capital. We're looking at aircraft or people that had bought fractions that were now distressed so we could set up a secondary sort of brokerage on these fractions. So there were great opportunities. And also everybody at that point was retracting their marketing budgets. And we went out there and gave a new narrative. We went out with a new story. And from that, we went forth.
So I'd like to just set up exactly what it is you offer now. And I would say that's perhaps a solutions company for everything that has to do with charter and private jets. We're talking about events. We're talking about sales. You really cover all those things. And where to land a plane, where to land on a private island. You do all these things. You cover all the bases.
Yeah. The first thing when you start a business is you have to put your tent pegs down. You have to kind of really look at what's going to make you the money to get the turnover. And you have to make that. The engine room has to keep going. And then after that, you can begin to diversify and look at opportunities. And inherently as well, you've now got a client base that's growing. They potentially were going on to buy aircraft. There were lots of opportunities that were sprouting, so we decided to make the most of those. After sort of working on the charter side, we then grew the aircraft sales side. We then got the Avanti Evo dealership in about 2014. So we had this diverse portfolio. As you probably know, and anybody listening to this who knows the private jet market, it's hugely competitive. It's a big arena with a lot of players. So you always have to be thinking, how do I differentiate myself from the rest of the cattle in the field? What can I give that's going to be slightly different? And Richard's thinking going back was looking at a service style, which was slightly old, and tardy and recreating it and rebirthing and reshaping a new onboard service and the way that we deliver from the moment a client leaves the house to the moment they arrive at their destination. What we've tried to do is break down it in parts and think, how can we enhance what we're presenting to our client? And a lot of that has been with regards to our recent elements of our business, which has been the Aviation Sommelier. We're the first company that actually did a wine tasting at altitude, a scientific one, which proved that wine does change in its body and context. And therefore, we were then able to deliver a wine list that was certified from our sommelier from those testings we did. And then from that, we sought more about well-being on board, got the aviation nutritionist on board, looking at how we can look at food and the science of food and how the body, the mechanics of the body work at altitude under pressure. And then now onto our well-being program, which has sort of been built around our sporting personalities and how can we enhance their journey in terms of their well-being so that when they get to wherever they're going to play a game or whatever they're going to do, we can have them arriving at that destination feeling refreshed and ready. And so taking all those elements into account, we've created this product-based service, which I think has been successful to date.
When you're talking about wellness there, I imagine a big part of the conversation today is also in sustainability. And that's probably an obvious question that you get from a lot of clients as far as sales, but impact, noise pollution, things on the environment. How do you tackle that?
Sustainability is key right now. And I think the aviation industry is looking, thank God, forward to the future, and it has to be sustainable. The aircraft that I sell, the Avanti Evo, is one of the, we can't call it the greenest, but we can call it the most environmentally friendly aircraft. It's a turboprop with a turbine engine. It burns roughly about 40% less fuel than a normal jet engine. So in terms of the CO2 emissions, that's reduced significantly. And also in the build of the aircraft, they use sustainable paint and the whole build is considered environmental. So this is the way the aviation industry is moving forward. This is something that everybody is sitting up in their seats and considering. We were discussing VTOL aircraft the other day, which is a vertical takeoff and lift aircraft. And these are composite material. They are sustainable. They're battery operated. So I think the future is going to look very different for aviation. But at the moment, we still have to make sure that in all the ways that we can, we are reducing our footprint.
It sounds like you really have your finger on the pulse of both service, but also being a modern, efficient company at the same time.
All these things are important to our clients. And at the end of the day, if you're a corporation, you're looking, you know, in terms of your CSR, these elements of flying are important. And therefore, we have to represent that. And we have to be aware as an industry that that is going to be very much key in the future. And we have to address it now. And I think that we are. And we look at the big manufacturers, Bombardier, Airbus, and everyone is gearing towards, and Boeing, towards a greener, more sustainable future and using composite material that we can create lighter aircraft and less fuel burn.
In an age where the relationships with manufacturers are so important to the success or failure of airlines, how do you go out and build those relationships? How important are those conversations with manufacturers?
They're really important, and as we are important to them, because we also hear what the client is saying in terms of aircraft and what they're looking for. So we work with most of the major manufacturers, Bombardier, Dassault, Embraer. So always looking to ask some questions, also looking at the future, what they're planning to do in the next 10 years. The interesting thing is actually recently we influenced a manufacturer through a particular need that we saw kept arising. And it was basically a sort of shuttle service where a lot of the commercial airline routes are being cancelled. But there's a large volume of people that need to get from those two destinations on a weekly basis. So we then approached them and said, look, actually, there's a great opportunity here for a new shuttle configuration. There's a lot more into it than that, but I won't disclose too much because we're hopefully going to launch it in the next 6 months. This is about us working with a manufacturer to create change in terms of the cabin configuration, in terms of the seating, in terms of the weight of the aircraft and how we could achieve what we were looking for and what the clients were looking for and develop something that sat in that remit. So that is a really, I think, good example of how we do work with them, because we are basically flying their customers around on charter. And also in terms of the aircraft sales side, because also our clients are coming to us to purchase aircraft, it's important for us to keep those relationships with each one of the manufacturers. And so it is something that I hope that we endeavour to keep in touch with them and to keep ahead in terms of what they're planning.
Some of the things you're doing have to do with companies that are offering all types of different experiences. I think of Henry Cookson, who has been on this show himself, and I believe in the Antarctica as well. So how do you provide that expertise? What does that look like from your company's standpoint?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the travel industry is changing. People want to sort of go a little bit on the untrodden path, and we're exploring a world and continuing to explore it. And this is where Henry is brilliant at, in terms of being able to narrate these wonderful trips to different and various destinations, one being the Antarctica. We have very much followed that over the last 6 years. We took the first private jet aircraft into Tuvalu, which is in the Pacific. It's a small island with about 12,000 inhabitants. It has a coral runway. That was one of our first trips, which we had to spend about sort of 4 months in preparation, in terms of upgrading the airport category for the fire category. And there were many elements of that trip that we had to bring together to make that work. So we do all the necessary due diligence. We don't take unnecessary risks. And that's the most important thing in aviation, is safety. And that is paramount. But we will look at various destinations, and we look at how we can take aircraft in there and what aircraft we can take in there and what aircraft is best for that mission. And this is a growing industry. It's a huge industry. It is transformational travel now. And I think that we'll see an increase in it.
In an age of such automation and where we're flying so much, we do so much that has nothing to do with the human contact, how do you deal with that personal touch and customer service? How important is that to you?
It's really important. I think that's the one thing that I personally, for me, I always long for, whether I'm dealing with a bank or wherever I'm going. I want that personal customer service, and I think we've lost it in many, many ways. Richard Branson, again, going back to the Virgin days, we had the onboard butler, the onboard bar. I mean, there were so many things where there was such a touch point of services that you felt valued. And people always used to think flying was very romantic and it was something they looked forward to. They dressed up to go on board. And so in one sense, we've tried to really recreate that service has to be there from the point of them calling you up to book a flight. It's about, you know, narrating that trip for them and making sure that every part of that journey they're feeling happy with. And I think that's a key element, which I hope that ConnectJets is a differentiator on.
What about yourself as a business leader? Has that role sort of grown as you've been in this specific job for 10 years as the owner of your own company? How do you see that today?
In one sense, when I started ConnectJets, you come in on a sort of romantic whim that you think it's all going to be wonderful, and you're very naive. What I did do actually in year three was I built a team of advisors, because a small company can't necessarily afford a board. So I created six advisors around me, and from various positions, from being a financier in the city, somebody who works at the top of security. That was my saving grace, I think, that they mentored me at a certain level and helped carve my path when I could have gone off track on many times. So you grow as an individual. The things that worried you on day two certainly don't worry you 10 years later. You realise what you need to be concerned about and what you don't. And wisdom is the best thing. I mean, in life, it's always about learning. I mean, the black box on an aircraft, sadly, is always there because we need to learn from our mistakes. As long as you can keep learning from them and changing the process or changing whatever needs to be done in yourself and in your team and in your company, then you can be sustainable. And I think we've been going now 10 years. I still own the company 100%, so, which in our world is unheard of. But it's managing cash flow, it's managing all those elements. So as an individual, I think you do grow through the stresses and strains and challenges.
You talked about mentors there, and actually your relationship with Richard Branson has almost come full circle, because he's asked you to be a mentor yourself. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. So I'm now a mentor for the Virgin Unite, which is their mentoring program. It's really nice to go back to see these young entrepreneurs that are looking to the future, innovating, trying to transform the world through their products or their services. So I found it a real joy to go back. And yes, it's just something I wouldn't have foreseen, but I've been very, very grateful for it.
Are you still learning a lot day to day? Or have you enjoyed this journey, learning about yourself as a business leader?
Learning never stops and challenges never stop. And when you're working in a world of aviation, you're flying pieces of aluminum tubing around the world every day. You're always, not necessarily facing a challenge, but you're always having to look at a landscape that is forever changing. And as we talked about now, the landscape is about sustainability. So you're looking at new challenges. We're looking at Brexit. We're looking at so many things that are forever changing that. And so we have to be always awake. We have to deal with those challenges and deal with them within us as well, because some of those can be quite hard to deal with.
You know, we're running out of time, Gabriella, but I'd be remiss to not ask you about how you see gender issues in the aviation field, because I've heard you say that there needs to be more women across the board, not just in the boardroom, but from the ground up, there needs to be more women all across aviation.
Unfortunately, for many, many years, it has been a very low percentage of women as pilots. If we take that sort of sector of the industry, 5% around the world are female. Great companies like EasyJet have created the Amy Johnson campaign, which is now, hopefully by 2020, will have 20% of their crew being female. So we are seeing manufacturers and airline carriers change the face of aviation. In our world of business aviation, we're probably a little bit slower. We're a little bit more behind. I think I am the only woman to have held a manufacturing agency agreement. That has to change, because women are good at selling aircraft and we need to come into that space. I'd like to see more women in that space. I don't want to be speaking at a conference and I sometimes say the only benefit is that I'm the first one in the queue for the ladies. There's no queue there. But inherently, I want it to change for the future of the younger generation, that we can see more women in aircraft sales. We can see them in engineering. We can see them in every element of aviation. And I think that's slowly starting to happen. But I'd like to see a little bit more of it happen, particularly within our sector.
And you still see a lot of your role models as women through the history of aviation. Is that right?
Correct. I mean, Amelia Earhart was, for me, a role model. And you learn a lot from her. And also you learn a lot about failure, through failure and through success. But she had vision. She had balls. In many ways, she's inspired me in terms of how she positioned herself. And she was a sort of spokeswoman for women at that time. But there are other role models too, even today, that I look up to, like Kirsty Moore, the first Red Arrows pilot. Jo Salter, the first fast jet pilot. So we need to actually bring more of those role models out to the forefront and talk about them a bit more within our industry. I think that would be very healthy, especially when you look at kids leaving school today. Very few of them that I ask know about a career in business aviation. If you go into the schools, they don't even have it in the career curriculum. So I think it needs to start right back at that point when children are making their decision between 7 and 10 and saying, actually, I could be an engineer or I could be selling aircraft. So we need to change that kind of stereotypical message that we've had out there and introduce kids at a young age to aviation.
Do you think that's part of your impact now, more than 25 years in the aviation industry?
I think it is. I mean, I am probably known now as a woman in aviation, and I hope for all the good reasons that I like to express myself in terms of seeing more women, gender balance and equality. And I do think, again, it goes back to that if you find yourself in a position where you're the minority, then sometimes you have to use that voice to change the status quo. And that's what I feel that now that I've got a voice, I've got a platform, I'm recognised in the industry, ConnectJets is a well-known, respected brand, and therefore that voice opens doors for you to go and give that message. So yes, I think it is.
That's all the time we have for on today's show. Thank you to Gabriella Somerville for coming in to share the story of ConnectJets. Thanks as well to Cassie Galpin, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.